Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.
Discover the power within. Unity Online Radio. The voice of an awakening world.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions, with your host, Reverend Paul John Roach.
So hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. Yes, I'm your host, Paul John Roach, and I'm coming to you from a balmy, again, day in Fort Worth, Texas, but I think the whole world is experiencing the big heat right now. Today, I welcome a rising author and meditation and mindfulness practitioner and teacher, Darren Coben, to the show. He's a student of many teachers from different religions, and he's distilled years of practice and insight into his new book, and it's entitled Being Present, How to Cultivate a Peaceful Mind Through Spiritual Practice. And it's a gentle, thorough, and systematic guide to experiencing presence. It covers such themes as how to interact skillfully with others, the essence of meditation, the hindrances and addictions that can hold us back, and the qualities of simplicity, stillness, acceptance, and awareness that allow us to be more fully our true selves. And each chapter has points for reflection, which summarize Darren's ideas in pithy and helpful statements. So I like that. You can read the chapter and then sort of review it again at the end, which is nice. Altogether, it's a great guide for those wanting to live more fully present lives. So a whole lot of stuff packed into this book. No way we can cover all of it in an hour, but that's fine. We'll dip in a little bit. So it's a joy to welcome Darren and to talk about his fascinating book. So welcome, Darren.
Welcome. You know, as you've been talking there, my mind's been peaceful most of the time, but a question did pop in, and I was trying to work out where your accent's from, because it sounds like it's got an American part of it, but then somewhere else in the UK, possibly near Liverpool, would that be right?
Well, I grew up in Cardiff, actually, so but they say that Liverpool's the capital of North Wales, and Cardiff is, of course, the capital of Wales. So you were sort of right there, but yeah, and you're from Bournemouth, aren't you, on the south coast?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, it's very beautiful
down here. The weather's been really warm over the last few weeks, you know. We've not had much rain.
Exactly. And I think that's true, you know, in many places around the world. So we send our prayers and thoughts to all the people in Japan and Europe and America and wherever else. It's extremely hot. And unfortunately, there's fires and other events that are happening because of the drought. So we're all a little bit suffering from this global warming, I guess. In your book, I recognize various elements of Buddhism and Hinduism, maybe a little psychotherapy, 12-step program stuff. So you've had quite an eclectic mix over the years, right?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I've spent a lot of time with Buddhist teachings, and that's one key source. Another one is Eckhart Tolle's teachings that I've really appreciated. And then more recently, I've been learning more about yoga philosophy, and it's just wonderful how all of these different teachings integrate together so well. And I particularly enjoy taking teachings from different philosophies and religions and linking them, because for me, there's something, it feels like it releases some kind of energy, and it really lets you know that whatever it is that you're studying or reflecting on is the truth. It's kind of these things like being present and mindfulness, you know, they pop up everywhere. You know, so when you put all of that together, all of these religions and philosophies can't be wrong. So there's definitely something there about the teachings that weave their way through all the different religions and philosophies. And I really enjoy, as I say, linking these things together and keeping an open mind, learning from different sources. That's worked for me.
Yeah, lovely. Well, you know, there are many differences on the surface, aren't they, in ritual observance and all that sort of thing. But once you go a little deeper into the more mystical, unitive way of looking at things, you know, you notice the commonalities. We were talking about that last week on the show, you know, that Jesus really was a Zen master, you know, masquerading as a first century Jew, because his teachings, you know, could be taken as very pithy, but very profound teachings that a Zen master or Hindu master would be teaching to us. And if you can, you know, get rid of the idea of it being the overlay of the ethical system that's been overlaid on him, and get to what his real teachings are about, then we get to this unitive idea. Presence is, of course, you know, present within all religions, right? This idea of the presence. Sometimes it's the presence of God as a other, right? As a transcendental sense of presence. But the presence you're talking about is something we can experience very intimately ourselves. And being present is being in that presence. You know, I think it was Sailor Bob Adamson, if you're familiar with him. He's a sort of a non-dualist. His word is presence awareness. And I like that because it combines awareness with presence and gives that sense of that's what presence is. It's an awareness of our true nature. But you have six characteristics that I really like, and it's right there at the front of the book. Six characteristics of presence. You want to talk a little bit about those? Because I thought they were quite to the point, and I can read through them if you like. The first one is characteristics of presence. A still and quiet mind with no discursive thought. Easy to say, isn't it? No discursive thought when we spend most of our time, unfortunately, wrapped up in discursive thought, right? So how do we get still?
Yeah, the challenge, of course, is when we get lost in thought, I believe that we lose our connection to presence or to anything that transcends the ego. So the book is really about cultivating mindfulness and cultivating a peaceful mind, because once you've established that, it's then easier to connect yourself to something that transcends you. While the mind's busy and while the mind's lost in thought, then you're really, you know, you're blocking that connection. So when you are experiencing presence and when you are connected, the mind is peaceful. And I appreciate that, you know, there may be odd thoughts coming in here and there and practical things that you need to think about, but there's this background of stillness or peace in the mind. And that's one of the characteristics. You know, you can't experience presence if the ego has taken over your thoughts.
And your right.
So there's definitely a correlation between the two. I've started using the term mindfulness plus recently, which is basically mindfulness practice. So being aware of your experience and accepting your experience and having a peaceful mind. But the plus is being receptive to, you know, a higher force, higher consciousness, God, whatever you want to call it. And you put the two together. And in order to make that connection, mindfulness has to be operating. And I mean, a lot of people, the way that they teach mindfulness, they kind of stop at mindfulness and they don't go anywhere further. They don't link into the spiritual dimension. But that's absolutely fine, because, you know, if people are practicing mindfulness, and there are some great mindfulness teachers out there that just stick to mindfulness without that extra bolt on. But if people are practicing that, then you know, the chances are at some stage they are going to be able to establish this connection and experience and know what it's like to be truly present. And that's what I call mindfulness plus.
Yeah, I like that. And I like the analogy of the clouds in the sky too. You know, you're never going to be free of thought. It's like a cloud in the sky, but you can not be attached to it. It can just be whatever happens. They're generated, they're moving across the sky, but they're not impinging on your spaciousness, right? I think that's the key there. And if we're lost in thought, that means that there's no sky, there's just clouds. You know, we're just totally focused on the clouds, and that's not helpful. So yeah, like you said, the second characteristic, you already mentioned it, connectivity to something that transcends us. An intrinsic part of this transcendental experience is receiving love and giving love. So we're connected, aren't we, in some way to this larger sense of who we are in truth, right? We're beginning to cook with gas, as we might say.
Yeah, and I mean, this one is a really difficult one to explain. And as you know, you can't explain it within a book. You can kind of point to it. But many people who I speak to have experienced something like this. And it could be in meditation. It could be that they experience this when they're out in nature, or they see something beautiful, or they look into the eyes of their beloved, or it can be after, you know, a big shock and quite a lot of suffering, and all of a sudden there's this other, it's like another dimension, something comes online, you know, and for most people, me included, it comes and goes, you know, my connection with it throughout the day, and then there's also when you're asleep at night, maybe we can talk about that in a little while. But throughout the day, my connection to presence, it comes and it goes. I establish it and then I lose it again. And when I lose touch with it, there's always this correlation with this link with the ego taking over and the mind chattering away. And you're like losing your awareness of your own thoughts. But once the mind settles down again and becomes more still and peaceful, then this presence, it comes back online. And when the presence is there and when you are online, everything that you think and that you communicate and all of your physical actions that come out of that state of presence are skillful. And the opposite is true, that when you're lost in thought and you're not online or you're not present, then whatever you think, say, or do is going to be unskillful and is going to cause harm. So it really is that binary, you know, with the mind. You're either lost in thought or you're present, one of the two.
And I think some people at this stage will say, oh my goodness, this sounds too complicated. You know, it's such a hard task to do this. And I like the idea that, you know, Sri Nagasadatta Maharaj, the great Indian teacher, said it's natural, you know. And in fact, that's what his name means, you know, Mr. Natural, basically, Nisargadatta, the natural state. And I love that idea. Are you here?
Yeah.
Are you hearing me? Something popped. Oh, no, good. Just to finish that comment, you know, I think we need to relax more, right, into this natural state. It's not a question of having to get it all right, you know, follow, jump through the hoops and having to follow all these patterns and paths and everything, but rather trust the natural wisdom that's already present within us.
Yeah, it is very much a natural state, and it is there to be accessed. And part of your practice is to spend time reflecting and thinking about the things that take you away from that. So think about what hinders your mindfulness, what stops you from becoming present, and then taking some responsibility to make changes in your life and make things better for yourself and configure your life in a way that's more conducive to having a peaceful mind, you know, and that might be changing some of the things that you do, maybe changing some of the people that you hang out with. And it also means things like basic things like taking responsibility for the body, because there's obviously a big connection between the body and the mind and being able to access presence. I mean, the yogis have been talking about that for years. And then also, I think being honest about certain themes and regular challenges that you have with your thoughts and identifying addictions, not just addictions to things like substances or chocolate or shopping, but addictive thought patterns, because often it's these addictive thought patterns that end up leading us to becoming lost in thought. So sometimes, you know, we need to say, okay, well, this has been happening again and again. I need to do something about it. And there is sometimes a time and a place, you know, to go and maybe see a therapist or, you know, talk to a friend about what's going on inside your head and to do some work with it, to try and allow the mind to become more peaceful and more still. So it's a lot about taking responsibility. You know, I believe that spiritual practice is that there's an active element to it. It is absolutely about relaxing and letting go and acknowledging what's there. So there's that side to it. But the other side to it is taking action and changing your life situation and working with your own thought patterns and working on your body in order to set things up in the right way. And that will then cultivate more of this presence. And that's really what the book's about.
I want to jump to the fifth characteristic, because it speaks to what you just said. And it uses an interesting turn of phrase that I think can be confusing if we don't truly understand what's being said here. So I want you to explain it for us. The fifth characteristic of presence is skillfulness, which is taking responsibility for our actions, you know, to act skillfully rather than unskillfully. And then you say aligning us to give the universe what it needs for the totality to become more conscious. Now, what do you mean by that? Aligning us to give the universe. Hasn't the universe already got everything it needs? So what does that phrase mean for you?
Yeah. Well, everything, you could argue that everything's perfect and it is as it is now. But the other way of looking at things is that actually the universe, and I mean, let's maybe keep it to human beings. That might, I mean, we could go wider than that, but that might keep things simpler for us to understand. Is that the consciousness is evolving? Yeah. So over time, over the years, decades, centuries, as human beings, overall, we are becoming more conscious. So there's definitely a journey that's taking place. And if you look at, you know, generations gone and further back and what used to happen hundreds of years ago compared to how things are now, although things aren't perfect now, they've actually moved on quite a bit. So there's this evolution there and there's this progression in our collective consciousness. And when you're present and when you're connected, you're basically in the flow of that, and you're doing your bits to allow things to move forward in the right direction.
Right, and that's the way I interpret it, is sort of getting ourselves out of the way, if you like, so that the universe can do its beautiful thing through us. You know, if we're full of hindrances and addictions and trance-like states, you know, it's hard to be in the flow, isn't it? It's hard to let the universe be all that it can be in that sense. And so when we get ourselves out of the way, then we can really be us. Because you say, in absolute sense, we don't exist, right? That what we see as ourselves isn't really what's going on, right? It's an identification with something that isn't really there. So again, that's freaky for people who are very conditioned to seeing this body-mind as a very solid thing. But I think once you understand that it's not, you know, it's subject to time and change, it's not solid. It's not the reality of who we are. We are much more beautiful and wondrous than that, actually.
Yeah, that's a really good point. It is freaky, I think, to start with, when you contemplate that we don't exist. I mean, I was fortunate enough to spend many years reflecting on this and meditating on it. But even so, like most people, I will still walk around most of the day thinking that I do exist, even although I know logically and scientifically that I don't. And I think that it's something like every 7 years, every single atom in our body is changed. So after 7 years or however long it is, it's something like that. There's not one atom in you that's the same that was there 7 years ago. So, I mean, that tells you scientifically that there's nothing fixed about you. You know, all we are as human beings, well, certainly at the level of form, you know, the stuff that we can evidence and that we can identify, is a process. You know, human beings are all processes, and we're born and we live and we do stuff and we die, and it's different for each of us. So we're all these little processes, and they are small on the grand scheme of things, these little processes, and all of those little processes join together with each other and all the other processes, you know, like trees and the sea and even, you know, objects. Even if you take a table or a mobile phone, that's just a process as well. So all these little processes that we conceptualize in our minds, they're all linked together into one big process, which I call the process, with a capital T and a capital P. And we are a small part of that bigger process. So there's nothing really fixed about us. We are one. And that bigger process, by its nature, is infinite. You know, there's no beginning or end to it. It's just this one big infinite process. And I believe that within that big process, the process, is some intelligence which governs the process. And this intelligence is evidenced when we behave in certain ways, think certain things, say certain things. There's certain things that work and certain things that don't. So it kind of makes sense to be kind and not to cause harm. It makes sense to be truthful. It makes sense to be generous. It makes sense to keep things simple. There are certain rules that when you follow them, life just gets much more easier and you don't cause as many problems for yourself and for the people around you. So there is this intelligence, and some philosophies might call it Dharma, or they might have certain rules and teachings. And when you look across the religions at the various lists of advice that they give to their followers, you know, they're all quite similar. You can stitch them all together. So it is orderly, this big process that I'm referring to, and it is governed by a set of rules, and there is intelligence that sits behind it. Now, I don't know how that intelligence works or where it comes from. And I also don't know how it could be seen or heard or felt, but it's definitely there, because, you know, when you observe your own experience and you observe the world in general, you see certain things playing out over the centuries, and certain things work and certain things don't. So spiritual practice is very much about establishing that connection with the intelligence, so you align yourself to follow its rules or its guidelines. And, you know, through doing that, you live a life of harmony and your life's more peaceful. If you don't do that, it causes problems.
So in other words, we're all part of the Borg, right? We will be assimilated. You know, resistance is futile. And I'm being facetious, because that, you know, that is one concept of this oneness, that we all get assimilated into this Borg or whatever it is. But the difference for me in between that and the intelligence and presence that you're talking about is that the presence is endlessly creative and beautiful and expansive, right? It's not making us think and feel a certain way. It frees us from any limits, if you like. And these some of the other characteristics you have, a wise and loving creativity that can manifest in any form, right? You're not limited to one form or the other. You're not being assimilated into one way of thinking. And it's a loving appreciation experience of beauty, I would say, in all its forms. And then the sixth one, which is common to many religions, is that idea of fearlessness, right? And I've experienced this very deeply myself, is that when you let go of who you think you were and become part of this, whatever it is, this presence, that then you're able to do things and have a sang-froid and a sense of centeredness in a way you could never have imagined when you were identified with little me, right? And it's extremely beautiful, isn't it? I think Jesus exemplified it so well in his living experience, because he went through this awful, terrifying, you know, torture and mayhem there at the end of his life, and yet was able to have the grace, you know, to be compassionate and loving in the midst of that. And to me, that's full demonstration of what we're talking about, you know, the ability that we have when we are one with the one, if you like.
Yeah, and that's right. And the fear that I'm referring to here, it's not the kind of fear you'd experience if, you know, a big angry dog was running after you, because then you would be afraid. That's more of a kind of fear that gets generated by the body. And I'm sure that with Jesus, when he went through what he did on the cross, his body would have been experiencing.
I'm hearing the music. We got to stop. Sorry there, Darren. We're at the break. Let's listen to these messages from Unity. We'll be back in 2 minutes with Darren Colburn.
You're listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world. When listeners like you contribute to Unity Online Radio, you're making a positive difference in your life and the lives of other spiritual seekers. Go to unityonlineradio.org and click on Donate to make a one-time donation. Or sign up for monthly contributions. Thank you for your support.
Here's Eric Butterworth with a Unity Mindful Moment.
Unfortunately, religions have tended to present themselves as institutions instead of perceptions, something you join instead of a transcendence that you experience. We've tended to believe that God works exclusively through the machinery of an institution. So it is self-evident that most persons believe that you go to church to get close to God. The fact is, if God is present in the church, God is also present in the theater. God is present, period, because God is an omnipresence, everywhere present. So you don't go to church to get close to God, but you go to church, perhaps, hopefully, to be challenged to dig within yourself and to find that consciousness of the presence that is with you wherever you go, so that wherever you go, wherever you are, God is.
To pick up the Eric Butterworth book, Practical Metaphysics, go to unity.org and click on Shop.
Here's a Unity Mindful Moment. The ancient Chinese philosopher known as Lao Tzu brings us into the present moment with this quote. Do you have the patience to wait until your mud settles and the water is clear? Can you remain unmoving till the right action arises by itself? The master doesn't seek fulfillment, but not seeking, not expecting, is fully present and can welcome all things. When you're feeling impatient, think about this passage and trust in the moment.
Healing ourselves, our communities, and the planet is the theme for this year's World Day of Prayer, September 13th at Unity World Headquarters at Unity Village. Join us live or participate virtually as we broadcast to Unity and New Thought communities around the world. The World Day of Prayer is a unique and inspirational event like no other. Enjoy music, prayer, and meditation as we commit to healing ourselves, our communities, and our world. Go to worlddayofprayer.org for more information.
Stretch your mind and open your heart every Thursday at 10 a.m. Central with Yogacharya Ellen Grace O'Brien and the Yoga Hour, Living the Eternal Way. Gain insights into spiritual principles that touch upon the most practical aspects of our lives, like work, relationships, health, and diet. Discover time-tested practices from the ancient system of Kriya Yoga, a philosophy for living a more fulfilled life in today's hectic world. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Call now with your question or comment. 816-251-3555. That's 816-251-3555.
We now return to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with Darren Coben. We're talking about his book, Being Present, Cultivate a Peaceful Mind Through Spiritual Practice. It's originally published by Findhorn Press and Inner Traditions over here in the States, but you can get it in all the usual outlets. And if people want to get hold of you, Darren, what's the best website for them to go to?
My own website, which is www.darren coburn, which is spelled cockburn.com, www.darrencoburn.com, and
right,
various teachings on there and links out to social media. So it'd be lovely to hear from people. If they've got any comments on the show or would like to ask a question, that would be nice.
And there's lots of spiritually wise people in England, it seems. I got a friend, Richard Anderson. So this is a shout out to Richard, if you're listening. Richard's got a new book out, coming out soon, called Spiritual Detox, which I think fits in very well what we're talking about. He's going to be on my show later in the year or in the new year when the book's distributed. But he's near you. He's just down there in Devon. So let's get back to the book. Ego. It's not good. We're going to get rid of it. Is that right?
Yeah, it's a difficult one, the ego, working with the ego. I mean, people have so many definitions of what the ego is. And I align myself to Eckhart Tolle's definition. And I'm going to provide you more with my understanding of that definition rather than quote him directly. But I understand it to be like the sum total of your identifications or attachments. You know, so it might be roles that you're identified with, assets that you're identified with, beliefs, opinions. You know, you put all of that stuff together and that is what creates the ego. And when the mind is lost in thoughts, when you're lost in your thoughts, lost in your emotions, when you've lost awareness and you've lost presence, then the ego is in the driving seat. So what most of us find each day is that we will kind of flip-flop between these two states. We're either present and we're being guided by what transcends us and we're going in the right direction and we're peaceful and we're in flow, or we're lost in our thoughts and our thoughts and our communication and our actions are being driven by the ego. And when we're present, then whatever comes out of, as I say, thoughts, communication, action is always kind and it's based in love. But when the ego is involved, it tends to be, well, it is, it's trying to control things to suit its own agenda based on its own identifications or attachments. And that's what causes a problem And that's what causes harm, because what the ego doesn't understand is that things are changing all the time. So when we attach to things or identify with things, it causes suffering, because inevitably these things are going to change. Or sometimes, even if they don't change, which they will at some point, but if they don't change over the short to medium term, we can still be afraid of them changing. And then we try and control things to fix ourselves in a certain things that we identify with, you know, things that we might keep telling people about ourselves, all constitute our ego. So there's a chapter in the book on the ego. I think there's a big section in there on the ego. Yes, hindrances on the ego within the book. And in there, I define it and I talk about its characteristics. And I actually refer to it quite a lot within the book. Right. It comes up a lot, you know, this being present, being mindful, for me, is a lot about being aware of the ego and observing it when it comes up. Because once you know that the ego is active, you transcended it. So every time you do catch your ego, it's important to give yourself a pat on the back and say, well done, because that's a positive thing.
It's right, I think.
In the film, don't know whether you can remember it, The Gremlins, where if light shines on a gremlin, it kind of perishes it and reduces it and kills it. And the gremlin doesn't like that. And the ego is the same. You know, it doesn't like the light of awareness or presence. But ultimately, you know, that's what will reduce it and remove it. Yeah, everything starts with awareness.
Well, I think that's a hugely important point too, is that, you know, we can spend a lot of time trying to eradicate our ego or eradicate the hindrances. And that's not always a skillful way of approach, because instead we need to focus more on the light that's available to us. And in so doing, the ego, the hindrances kind of fade away, right? Because they kind of exist in that new awareness, like you say. So it's not a question of struggling to try and overcome our ego, because that's really ends up the ego trying to control the ego, which is self-defeating. Rather, it's better to notice what we're doing. And I love that, you know, it doesn't matter the mistakes you've made. It's once you notice them, they're no longer a problem, right? They're seen for what they are, and I think that's a beautiful idea. Rather than I'm, you know, endlessly trying to perfect myself. I think it was Don Henley did an album one time called "Building the Perfect Beast." You know, that we're obsessed with creating a better body, a better mind, and it's not really about that. You know, it's about understanding who we are beyond the body and the mind, right? And allowing the presence to do its beautiful thing in and through us. You've got a chart, by the way, on page 108, good spiritual number, about hindrances, you know, what they are, description of them, options for antidotes, and then the positive opposite of that hindrance. And so, you know, that any given time we're able to move beyond any of the hindrances, sensory desire, ill will, sloth and torpor, restlessness and worry, doubt. These are very Buddhistic hindrances here from the Buddhist tradition. But the positive opposites are contentment, acceptance, alertness, ease, and trust. And who wouldn't want those beautiful positive qualities? Like you said earlier, the universe is kind of weighted in the direction of those things that are going to enhance us, right? We do ourselves a disservice if we're always getting caught up in the hindrances, which are based on fear and separation and lack, and that's not our inheritance. Our inheritance is something much more beautiful than that.
Yeah, this is a wonderful list, and it's come from Buddhist teachings. You're right there, and that's its source. Because when we're lost in thought, when we lose a connection with presence, it is always one of those things that you just read through that's responsible. You know, you're either craving for something, you've got a problem with something, you've got some resentment towards something. It could be because your body's tired, your mind's tired, you're restless, you're worrying, you're experiencing doubt. And everything falls into those five hindrances. There isn't anything else that can take you out of a state of being present. So this is an absolutely wonderful list. And as you say, those opposites that you experience when the mind's peaceful, like acceptance and being alert and calm and having faith, you know, that mindfulness practice and being present can really be summed up within this list. You know, if you just took this list and worked with that and didn't do anything else, it's going to, you know, move you forward greatly. And I do quite a bit of meditation. And although I appreciate that meditation is not for everyone, meditation is helpful because you can observe the mind and you can actually see these things going on and you can tag them. So you can sit there or standing, however you do your meditation, and watch the mind. And when the mind gets carried away with itself and you get lost in thought, once you wake up from that, you can tag the thoughts. Ah, that was a craving, or ah, that was ill will, or ah, that was worry. And you start to get into the habit of marking your thought patterns and getting to know these hindrances and congratulating yourself when you notice each hindrance. And then when you're outside of your meditation and you're doing your day-to-day activities, you know, you can do the same thing, and it really gives you a framework, a useful framework to observe the mind and keep the mind in check.
Right. And you talk a lot about addictions too, don't you? They're linked to the hindrances, I think, because they arise from the same idea that, you know, if I can escape it to another world, I can do something that frees, I think is going to free me from the various negative emotions or whatever that I'm feeling. They're a double-edged sword of it. It says it's going to help you, but it doesn't really do so.
I apologize. I just caught some of what you just said. I think you referred to addictions and linked them over to the hindrances. I talk a lot about addictions within the book, and addictions are much wider than most people.
Whoops.
Sorry.
I missed some of that. I guess. I hope nobody else did, but I think of consciousness beyond discursive thought there, Darren. I just went out there for a minute, you know, in a samadhi state. Yeah. Now I'm back. I can now interact with you again. But it was very beautiful, and it's exactly as you presented. That presence truly is. It's a beautiful place. Unfortunately, I can't remember anything that you said, but I hope you said some wonderful things to our audience. So my apologies for not being present.
Yeah, we were talking about addictions, and there is a whole chapter on addictions in the book, because working with your addictions is a central part of cultivating a peaceful mind. It's a central part of your practice. The addictions, like the common ones that people have, like maybe caffeine or alcohol, chocolate shopping, those kind of addictions, or some even more serious addictions, that's one side of it. But the other addictions that we have, as I mentioned earlier, are addictive thought patterns, you know, so stories that we tell ourselves and things that the mind just automatically does in order to escape from pain, because that's why these addictions get created. They get created because we don't want to, or we're not capable of feeling or experiencing emotional pain. So then we turn to something, be it a substance or some behavior or thought patterns, to escape from the pain. We do that, and then that creates, you know, like a habit, really. So we have to understand our addictions and be honest about our addictions, and then take responsibility to work with them and reduce them. And what I say in the book is that once all of your addictions have gone, you know, in a way, that is enlightenment, because if all of your addictions are gone, including all of your addictive thought patterns, then you're going to be 100% creative and aligned and connected with that presence that we've been talking about.
It seems that one of the biggest addictions that we have in our modern society, I'm not just talking about opioid use or whatever, which has become, you know, a big problem, but it's the sheer busyness of our lives, you know, the rushing. I can't get on the highway or even on the street without some kind of egregious behavior. You know, nobody's got any patience or time for anybody else. And I think we see this also on, you know, with social media, where people just don't have time to have a sensible discussion. You know, it's we got to choose off sides or whatever. It's become very divisive. And I think this is a very disturbing part of discourse and interaction, you know, in our modern society, is this lack of civility.
Yeah, there's a chapter in the book on simplicity, and I'm writing a new book at the moment, which provides 7 guidelines, which talks about, like, if in a way the rules within this intelligence that we was referring to earlier. And one of them is do only what needs to be done, and obtain
and maybe
only what you need.
Right. It's not easy, is it?
It's not, because culturally we've got lots of things working against us. You know, we've got targets and pressures because the economies in our various countries need to be performing, and there's a link there with power. So many people, they're under a lot of pressure in their work. And then the other thing that we have, of course, is lots of advertising and encouragement to be going out and doing lots of things and buying lots of things and doing lots of different activities to be culturally acceptable. So it feels like a fight sometimes, you know, to keep your life simple and to do less and to have less. And those two things are related, you know, the amount that we do and the amount that we have. So part of spiritual practice, and you'll find this in most religions, philosophies, is taking responsibility for simplifying things. And, you know, we don't have to do this all at once. I think when people try and do it all at once, it becomes stressful and it doesn't work. It's a little bit like weight loss. If you need to lose weight, you're better off to do it gradually, you know. And it's the same with simplicity, with doing less, having less, and creating more space and stillness in your life. Is a journey. So there's a whole chapter dedicated to that.
Right, which is a very good chapter there. And, you know, the idea that we have to have more and more experiences, right? And we're not really experiencing the experiences because we're not present to them. We're just adding them to our list of things that we've experienced. And awareness is the opposite of that, isn't it? Awareness is being present to whatever it is. We don't have to have another experience. We could be aware of what's going on right now. And you have a great quote in the book. I want to read it. It says, we can remove the repetition in repetitiveness through awareness. And one of us, you know, gets, oh God, do I have to do that again? You know, the same boring routine or whatever it is. But once we're aware of noticing what's going on, even if it's, oh God, here we go again, then we're free of it. There's a sense of, ooh, this is interesting. Look at me reacting in this way, right? Rather than get lost in the feeling that it might arise, I'm able to see it for what it is, and I can actually begin to enjoy the thing that I disliked before. That's the interesting thing, because I'm noticing it in a different way, right? So it's kind of fascinating to notice my irritation, for instance, or my whatever it might be. Because I am free of it, actually. And it's like, I'm actually free of this. I don't have to identify with it. And that could be an extreme revelation, you know, that there's more going on than I thought.
Yeah, exactly. When people say that things are the same, or they're bored, they're doing the same old stuff, it's an illusion, because things aren't the same. And if you look carefully, your experience is different, and it's very different from moment to moment. But it's a little bit lazy in a way, because the mind conceptualizes things. It creates these concepts and goes, oh, it's all the same. Or I don't like that. But when you become aware and you experience what you're doing fully, it's wonderful, because you know you can be doing the same conceptual activities, but they are subtly different, you know, every time. So becoming aware and becoming accepting of your experience, it stops you craving so much for wanting to do lots of different things and have lots of different things. And hey, it's fine to do lots of different things, and it's also fine to have lots of different things, but you don't actually need to be peaceful and to be able to enjoy life. You know, you really just need to be present. And, you know, that's really, in my opinion, the only reliable way that you can be happy.
You know, I was in Nepal back in the day when I was in my early 20s, and in a beautiful water garden north of Kathmandu, and I was worried at the time about rabies, because I got an open wound, and I was paranoid I might get rabies because all the dogs around and everything. I was a little bit open to obsessive compulsive behavior back in the day, I was walking around this beautiful water garden, watching myself be paranoid and worried, you know, and just actually noticing it, like, that's not really me. That's just somebody who's worried and upset right now. And it was such an intense experience. I burst out laughing, and it broke the spell on my concern about it, about rabies or whatever, because I thought, I'm not really here. Yeah, you know, I'm pretending to be here, and then and creating this story about worrying about something that's not going to happen anyway. And even if it did, I'd have to deal with it, and we'll move on. But it was incredibly freeing. You know, it was like a Satori experience. You know, breaking open to the fact that it didn't happen because I was blissing out, you know, on beautiful scenes or visions of gods and goddesses. It happened because I was seeing myself. For who I was, you know, that I was self-generating my pain and suffering, and therefore I could also remove that from my consciousness. You know, I had the power there, and that was tremendously freeing. You know, and it was like I say, a big breakthrough. It was more than visiting the temples. It was a true experience of the presence that we're talking about.
And that is a lovely story, and it's just wonderful when you can experience a presence in that way, because even if your mind's doing things that aren't that helpful, or you're saying things or acting in a way that's unskillful, you can take responsibility for it, but you can actually detach yourself from it as well. And you need to do both things.
Yes.
Because being aware and having perspective on your thoughts and your communication and your actions, it allows you to be very kind to yourself, and it allows you to be able to see when you are connected and, you know, when you're doing the right thing. And just as importantly, it allows you to be forgiving and in a way to not take yourself too personally when you're
right,
not doing things in the right way. But that does need to be balanced with also taking responsibility. So
right,
you can hold the two. You take responsibility for all these things whilst at the same time appreciating it's not you.
Right. It's not a cop-out. You know, it's not me, so I'm scot-free here. No, it is you in the sense that you have an ego to a degree, right? A relative sense of self. So, you know, being honest about that is important. Thomas Troward, the great British metaphysician of the late 19th century, you know, said, if you've got a problem and it keeps niggling at you, just walk straight up to that problem and with a loud voice say, cock-a-doodle-doo. And I've always liked that, you know, cock-a-doodle-doo a problem. And I think what he's saying, though, is that, you know, it's to face it, is to be responsible, but not to take it quite so seriously, you know, to laugh in the face of it, if you like, to lighten up a little bit. And that seems to me that's a useful technique sometimes.
Yeah.
We're almost at the end of the show. In 5 seconds or more, or less, I should say, give us insight that we can take with us into the week.
Keep some awareness on your breath as you're going about your day-to-day activities, and see how that changes things for you.
That's good. Let me tell you about next week, and then we'll say goodbye to Darren. Next week, animal bioenergy healer and pioneer in the animal-human emotional-energetic relationship, Tammy Phillips joins me. She's going to talk about her new book, which is Soul Healing with Our Animal Companions. Right now, though, I want to say thank you so much to Darren. Darren, you have to come back on the show again. There's much more to talk about.
I'd love to for the next book. Yeah, thank you very much for having me on the show. Much appreciated.
You're very welcome. And thanks for listening, folks. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye now.
Thank you for listening to Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.